Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hameen, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM 360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM 360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the hosts or hostesses of AM 360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance. Now Joshua fought the battle of Jericho,
and the walls came tumbling down. Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invite you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world. And of course, yes, leaders are like the wind. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله السلام عليكم God's peace be upon you as we seek refuge with Almighty God from the shaitan, the rejected enemy of mankind. With Allah's name, the merciful benefactor, the merciful redeemer, we openly declare that Allah is the one God. There are no partners, absolutely no partners with Almighty God, and that Prophet Muhammad, prayers and peace be upon him, is a servant and messenger of God, of the one God. And today, listeners, please join me in connecting with A New Day for Al-Islam Community Radio, connecting with AM 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, as we present, CWSC presents Cultural Insights and the connection, the partnership that we have with A New Day for Al-Islam Community Radio with William Kareem. We have a special today. Prayerfully, we pray, send out du'as, make du'a for Imani Abdushakur to be awakened because she's one of the guests, and we're trying to raise her as she's in St. Petersburg, Florida. But her willingness to return to the I won't say the limelight, but to the stage or the forefront with AM 360, as she shared 3 years of her life on every Friday evening with you here on AM 360, the Know Me, Know Me Institute. It began, and then the Young Minds, as you may remember. She's now 24 and willing to come back into the waves of sharing what she's learned over her past few years. Now we have William Kareem and his son, Kevell Equan, will be coming with quick hitters, but we're going to be discussing the hip-hop and hip-hop and how the wars, if you will, the battling array of the in the hip-hop era and what that really means. So it has already started, but I wanted to share that with you. But now let's go in and connect with William Kareem and Cultural Insight.
In the early 80s, hip-hop collectives attended conventions to compete against each other for prize money and bragging rights. At first, these competitions were friendly face-offs to prove which crew could do a better job at rocking the crowd. That was until the Christmas Rappers Contest at the Harlem World Club in 1981. That's when a battle between Kool Moe Dee and Busy Bee Starsky changed how MCs approach rap competition forever. Busy Bee's claim that he would knock out all bums before the contest was not taken well by Kool Moe Dee. Determined to make a point, Kool Moe Dee entered the contest after Busy Bee finished his set and rocked the crowd with a burst that directly attacked Busy Bee's credibility as a rapper.
Hold on, Busy Bee, I don't mean to be bold, but put that part there, that part bullshit on hold. We gonna get right down to the nitty-gritty. Gonna tell you a little something, why you ain't shit.
Kool Moe Dee's rhyming disses inspired other MCs to adopt his style and engage in small rap battles at basketball courts and corner stores around New York. This style helped move the genre away from the old-school, upbeat, party-themed hip-hop into a grittier art that showcased lyrical ability. Roxanne Shanté was among the first female battle rappers in the 80s, and a rap beef pioneer starting the Roxanne War with her infamous diss track, Roxanne's Revenge, in 1984.
My name is Roxanne, and I came to stay. I rock it to the beat, and I do it every day. As hip-hop entered the 90s, the tradition of calling out your peers on record continued, influencing several infamous rap beefs. Memorable conflicts between artists like Ice Cube and Common, Dr. Dre and Uncle Luke, Tupac and Biggie, and most notably, the exchange between Jay-Z and Nas have been etched into hip-hop history.
Went from nasty Nas to Escrow's trash. Had a spark when you started, but now you're just garbage.
Talk about me, laugh behind my back, but in my face, shots of well-wishing, friendly acting, envy, hot as snakes.
Over the next decade, battling on the streets for fun grew more popular and became a subculture of competing rappers testing their skills. In the mid-90s, hip-hop festivals like Scribble Jam featured freestyle battle competitions that would draw up-and-coming rappers to battle for a chance to earn prize money, trophies, and exposure. Seeing the appeal of freestyle competitions, TV networks began incorporating rap battles into their programming. Shows like HBO's Blaze Battle, MTV's MC Battle, and BET's 106 in Park would bring battle rap to worldwide television. In the early 2000s, Troy Mitchell, better known as Smack White, had begun interviewing and filming several established artists like 50 Cent, Beanie Siegel, DMX, and Cam'ron. But he wasn't just covering celebrities. Smack would also film with up-and-coming East Coast rappers. He would record their freestyles and produce indie music videos to help promote their image and mixtapes. Smack then took all of this footage and created a DVD video magazine called Smack DVD.
I used to go around, do exclusive interviews, shoot videos, help them promote their projects, help them, show them in environments and places that you won't normally see them in on a regular standard, you know, TV network like MTV, BET. You're going to see them in the studios. You're going to see them in airplanes, in a house, on a block, in a neighborhood.
Vlogging before vlogging was a thing, right? That's literally what it was.
Heavily bootlegged. Smack DVDs made it to outlets all around the world and became one of the most popular sources for uncensored hip-hop news and music. Smack began including rap battles near the end of each volume. And, in keeping with battle rap's origins, these battles took place in gyms, barbershops, and on street corners where crowds could watch the show.
I closed it off with a classic hip-hop battle. And, you know, that segment of the DVD got so popular. People used to buy the DVD with mainstream artists like, you know what I mean, Eminem, 50 Cent, you know, Cam'ron, Fat Joe, you know, Busta Rhymes. You know, I had all these major artists on the front of the DVD with major coverage of these artists, and people used to basically go buy the DVD and go to the back of the DVD first to watch the battles.
Smack. I literally, my first experience is exactly what you described. I'm interested, like, what's all this stuff? What's it? No. Skipping. This one, gotta see. So I never even caught the promo, the interviews, but the battle was the absolutely.
Waiting for his chance, and now he feel the time's perfect. Yep, he probably ain't want a battle, just wanted to meet me in person.
Then Worldstar came into play.
I didn't think about Worldstar.
And they made a killing because they wasn't into content creation. But they wasn't to traffic.
Absolutely.
So they killed me. That was a that business model was, you know, I mean, at that time was a success. Moving forward to 2009, you know, I just had to figure out, like, yo, what was the most valuable content that still exists with what I was producing, and that was battle rap.
As Smack DVD rap battles grew in popularity, Smack saw an opportunity to create a platform for battle rappers to perform in front of larger crowds. That's when the Ultimate Rap League was born. Better known as the URL, the Ultimate Rap League moved from the streets and began renting venues for battle rap events to house their growing number of fans. By 2009, the URL started posting their battles on YouTube for viewers to watch online. It was Tay Rock's Seatbelt Haymaker that shook the internet and solidified the URL as one of the most exciting channels to watch on YouTube.
You get another cut! And another cut. It looked like the seatbelt won't work in time. Buckle up, boy.
And there are more and more battle rappers becoming superstars in the community, like Geechee Gotti, with 57 battles on YouTube alone and over 32 million views. Geechee Gotti has been URL's Champion of the Year for 3 years in a row. As battle rap culture grew online, more and more leagues started popping up all over the world. Leagues like the Canadian-owned King of the Dot, the woman-led Queen of the Ring, the Filipino Flip Top, and the UK Don't Flop have pulled in millions of subscribers. Do you consider battle rap to be a sport?
Yes, absolutely. When I first started representing, you know, the art form of battle rap, you know, I modeled it after, like, you know, I try to model it after, like, the UFC. You know what I'm saying? Heavily influenced from the UFC.
That don't play good. Hold up.
Just wanted to come up with a name that people will always remember.
So now that you know how battle rap got started, let's break down how it works. A battle is usually two competitors going back and forth for three rounds. And at the end, it's up to the audience to decide the winner. There are several widely used forms of wordplay, but the most common are angles, schemes, haymakers, and punches. Punches are short for punchlines. They're the lines delivered at the climax of a setup.
Gang bang what? I'm supposed to be scared of them? I will have you and your flag hanging off a balcony like I'm proud to be an American.
Extra powerful punches are called haymakers. They're usually accompanied by a small pause to generate a stronger crowd reaction.
I was up in the hotel. Long rounds for cousin. Big rounds, I'm stuffing. They say ill in the lobby. I grabbed the nose running. I'm coming down with something.
For flair and creativity, a battler may also use a scheme. This is when a rapper presents a subject matter and then follows it up with a long-form parallel comparing the subject matter to something else.
Your career is just like Shaq's. He spent 4 years in Orlando and learned the harder way he couldn't hack it. Smack brought in a certain PG, and then we all believed in magic. You became lost and jealous. Ain't find out the way to compete.
While a lot of battle rap verses are written, there are also freestyles and rebuttals. Freestyles are where you improvise bars on the spot. You can reference your opponent's clothes or anything that's happening in the moment. A rebuttal is similar, but instead, you improvise bars responding to something your opponent just said. And lastly, we have angles. An angle is a personal attack that points out your opponent's flaws. Angles are all about focusing on specific things about your opponent to break them down.
I ain't saying your shit whack. But bro, it's the same move every time you kick that. Set a punchline. That's how you spit that? Just a candy rapper with four bars. You would see how easy it is to predict that?
Best punchlines come from with what resonates with people. So you don't want to say something that a bunch of people don't know about. And then it's like when you got an audience there, they can't pull out their phone or go to Google and look it up. So it's just about, you know, reading the room, knowing your audience. Like, you know, on the URL stage, I'm going to get a little more intricate because they already understand exactly what it is that we do.
What are the differences between a battle rapper and a studio rapper? What are some common misconceptions?
Common misconception is battle rappers can't make music. They put us in this very, very small box. You know what I'm saying? It's a bad stigma they got on us. They say we can't make music. I just don't understand, because battle rappers are clearly the best writers as far as element of being an MC.
You only get one opportunity. You can never say this again. You have one tape. You have to wow an audience time and time again with new materials.
In my whole career, everything I did was a throwaway. Because I can never use, if I use those bars again, I'm wrong.
You recycle it.
I'm wrong for using my own lyrics again. So our job is much harder.
Even if they're not creating chart toppers, battle rappers still have a huge influence on popular culture today. Whether it's ESPN commercials, the BET Hip Hop Awards, or reality TV. Then there's shows like Nick Cannon's Wildin' Out, which has taken inspiration from battle rap culture and even features URL stars Conceited, Charlie Clips, and Hitman Holla.
What kind of things do you see coming in the future for battle rap?
I'm trying to make this a household sport. What we have accomplished so far is amazing, because, like, you know what I mean, if you pay attention to what's going on in this culture, like, you know, you see so many different territories have adopted, you know, the style of this art form.
It's an art, it's right? An art. It's entertainment. And these guys has found a way to provide for their families, to entertain us this way. And they put on a show for it, and that's what it's about.
Even though it started in the underground, the sport has become so popular that teenagers who once dreamed of being the next big rap artist are now dreaming of being the next great battle rap star.
Before you go, I want to let you know about Fight the Power, How Hip Hop Changed the World, a new PBS series hosted by hip hop legend Chuck D. It's about how hip hop became a global movement that spoke truth to power.
Yes. This is Adam Naheem. Assalamu alaikum. I do have a couple of artists on the line who's definitely going to join the conversation. One is Kanodi Kwan. The other one is Bill Blass, US2G. And what I want you, but the first thing that I really want you to know is this, that in Islam, we didn't do, when the hip-hop was coming around, and my name is William Kareem, and I'm known as the original Muslim rapper. When we started doing hip-hop, you know, with the propagators, it was not about a battle. It never went into that where we were basically competing against each other. What we did was we made a presentation. You know, the propagators, we would sing a variety of songs, and then being making that hip-hop song, like Birds of a Feather and other songs, it was just part of the presentation, but it wasn't to battle against anybody else. Today, you have, I just like to mention that Misunderstood is a popular Muslim hip-hop artist, and she is a battle rapper. Then you have others. You have Abdul Wali Shaheed, who is a rapper, but he doesn't do battle rap. He, you know, makes a positive, constructive cultural presentation. And then you have others. Another one that we should mention that we have played here on Cultural Insights is Ismail. I'm brother Ishmael, I forgot his last name, brother Ishmael, but he's another rapper. So we have a bunch of rappers that are in the Muslim community, but we don't do anything that's called battle rap. That's not what we do. We make presentations, and that's very important. But in order to continue this conversation, I'm going to bring on also a battle rapper. One of the first battle rappers that I knew was Bill Blass, US2G. Assalamu alaikum, Bill.
Hey, what's up? What's up? What's up? What's going on, Pop? What's up? How's everybody doing?
Wonderful.
Good. And also, we do have Sister, do we have Imani on with us?
No, I should have mentioned that she's a night worker, and she's probably still getting her.
Okay.
But inshallah, if you can call it.
Understood. Understood. Very good. So we do have Kavelli Kwan and Bill Blass with us. Another interesting point that I want to make is that it was mentioned about the first one of the first battle raps between Kool Moe Dee and Busy Bee Starsky. Busy Bee Starsky changed his name from Busy Bee Starsky to Love Bug Starsky, and so that's what he became known as. And what he would do is he would give these. He was an MC, a DJ. He was an MC DJ, one of the first in New York City that was able to do both of them. So he was able to spin music, and he was also able to do raps too, and so that's what he would do, you know, with the people. He would put the music on, and then he would say a rhyme while music was going on. One of the most famous ones that he did was the song "Love Is the Message" by the Philadelphia group. But the point that I wanted to make with that is that I had a battle with Love Bug Starsky. And it was one of the misunderstood battles. It was just misunderstood between him and I, because I would get up on the stage and I would make my presentation, but Love Bug Starsky thought it was a threat to his presentation. So him and I had this clash for a few times, because, you know, he would be the one that would be spinning the music of where I was performing, and I wasn't doing battle rap. He was, you know, I just wanted to get up and make my presentation. But we finally got it squashed out, and, you know, he came to understand that I wasn't battling against him, but that, you know, I just wanted to get up and make my presentation, which was, you know, classic hits from classic song, poetry to music kind of situations. So that's something that hip-hop, that happened with hip-hop. But as time went on, Bill Blass, US2G, who's on with us, he became a battle rapper, and Kavelli Kwan became a battle rapper, because it winded up being in their generation that the art form of hip-hop changed from just making a presentation to this clash between titans. Bill, would you like to say something about that?
I think that it's interesting, the way in which, you know, what you just played kind of outlined what battle rap is and where its, you know, roots come from. And it's interesting, you know, Assalamu alaikum first and foremost to everyone on, blessings to Sister Martha, and, you know, American Muslim 360 crowd. As always, appreciate being on Cultural Insights. It's a Harlem thing, and when you talk about the URLs and you talk about SMAP and you talk about that battle rap evolution in terms of it as a business and a culture, you know, it has a lot to do with Harlem, the Bronx, Yonkers, Brooklyn, you know, the New York City boroughs kind of developing another thing, man, that people all around the world gravitate towards. And as you eloquently put it earlier, you know, it didn't just start with those guys. It is the evolution from the time that hip-hop began. And, you know, it's important for people to understand that this is not something that just came out of the blue or just started, you know, 20 years ago, 15 years ago. This is something that's at the heart of what hip-hop is, and that's competition. You know what I mean? It's about competing and being the best at what you do. And so that's where we are, you know. And I definitely traveled and dealt with that same stuff. Blast, you definitely can speak to it more effectively, because for me, it started out with me kind of. I was already an MC, but I wound up in Yonkers with Blast and joining in the kind of space where he was. So, you know, let's talk a little bit about how, you know what I'm saying, we kind of evolved in that space, you know what I'm saying, from what you were doing.
Right. I'm going to take it back a little bit, though, because from what I understand and what I've seen and what I've experienced, hip-hop started, battle rapping started before pop, really. It was, you know, see, when hip-hop started, the Jailhouse Toast and all of that stuff, it was about bragging rights. And bragging rights created the competition of who can brag better, or even if you didn't brag better, it was a thing of, you know, you doing your thing and the spotlight on you. And it's almost like back in the days when they was, you know, showing them pimp movies and stuff like that, when the Players Ball came and they had on the dress up. It started out like that, like the dressing, which you threw on, and who had the sharpest look and who had the nicest hat or who could say the nicest lines. You know, it started with being able to serenade a woman or woo a woman. You know, who had the lines that could make her smile, who could, you know, even you know, in most cultures, you know, the lure of the nightlife, the lure of, you know, the clubs, the lure of speaking
right
to women, the lure of, you know, it was just a thing. It was just a, you know, how, what could you say to make somebody smile, to make somebody's day, to make them feel good, to make them respond, to make them notice
or
you.
Or feel bad.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
very true,
what,
man. You know.
This is how the battle rap evolved. You can even take the first battle, not even battle song. It was just the first hip-hop song. After school, I take a dip in the pool, which is really on the wall. Off the wall, I got a color TV so I could see the Knicks play basketball. It was just bragging rights about your lifestyle, about who you are, what you're doing, and how you do what you do. So, you know, when it came to
right
us, that's what it was. We wasn't necessarily really battling on, you know, to say we're having a battle. We were battling to compete to show, yo, I'm the best at what I do.
Right.
Or I'm the best at what I do. Or I'm better at what I do. Or this is what I got to contribute. You know, so it became a different
way. Maybe you know, the thing, especially as far as the Muslim community is concerned, that the Muslim community wanted to be more constructive. I think that that's where it is. And I'm making this connection. And so that the Muslims that are listening will understand that this is a natural evolution, as Bill has been saying, because when you start talking about they called it, and many of us understand what the dozens was, playing the dozens, whole idea of the way that you put words together to woo a woman, kind of thing. So that was kind of a battle right there, you know, like, yo, man, you know,
right,
can you say the right thing to woo a woman? And then she might have a comeback line on you, you know.
You gotta
get past that. So, but with the Muslim community, it just became the idea of making a presentation. And that was all about a positive presentation. And that's why I wish that Imani was on, because she made some references as far as, you know, what she has decided to listen to as far as art. And many people do. When you start talking about Kendrick Lamar or Common or, you know, Mos Def or Talib Kweli and others that wind up doing hip-hop, you know, that you know, it's just like, I'm going to be positive. But this evolution that has happened is definitely, you know, a positive thing. Now, Bill, you know, I understand that you're getting ready to come out with a new album soon. Is that correct?
Yes, 2424. King of Kings and Queens.
So that's February?
That's February 4th, 2024.
Oh, that's 2424. Okay. All right. So then we'll make sure that, you know, we can go ahead and feature you so that you can do a presentation, which is a Sunday. So maybe we should probably do something next week, bring you on next week,
so that you can talk about it, or you want to wait till on the 2-4? You want to do something next week on that to highlight your album, or what? Or you want to wait till talk about it on the 10?
That's fine. We could talk about it when the album drops. But, yeah, I was just saying about battle rap is also, like, you know, it's a feeling. You know what I'm saying? It's not just all those things. It's feelings. You know what I'm saying? People get into your psyche to make you feel, you know, what they're saying. So it's a feeling as well. You gotta have the tough skin to be able to accept what's being said, because people are going digging for your flaws. You know what I mean? And you know the thing is most of the best battle rappers are ones who can make you realize the things that you really are, and that's where the most success comes from in battle rap. Because a lot of people speak things that aren't true. But when you can dig and find some things that are true in a person, those things really resonate and hit home and make battle rap successful.
Let me jump in real quick because, you know, y'all making some great points. You know, I just wanted to speak to a couple of them. One, without a shadow of a doubt, being a person who I've always, and as I was groomed in rhyming, had a certain positive spin that I'm going to put in my rhymes, right? And it requires, I think, for anyone who's going to be in any kind of competition, whatever that competition is, to understand where they want to compete. That competition is important, but that competition is based on where you want to compete. You know, if you are a basketball player and you're playing ball, you know, you can play in the park with your friends, but if you want to really compete, you've got to go and put yourself where there's certain basketball being played. So in New York, you want to go to West 4th Street, or you want to go to the Rucker. You know, if you want to really say that you're competing against a certain crowd, and particularly when you talk about street crowd, because that's a big part of what battle rap is, right? Battle rap is a street form of MCing, right? Because when you're talking about battling with people, there's threats being made, right? There are threats being made. I'm going to pull this out. Even when you played that piece earlier, Pop, where the gentleman spoke about Tay-Rock and how the Tay-Rock line about, you know, I'm slicing at you. You know, it's like I'm trying to buckle up, like he's buckling up his seat. But, you know, it's a threat. Like I'm cutting your face every, you know, I'm pulling up with the 4-5 and then put it on the floor and I'm aiming at your head. You know, like it's a competition and it can be viewed as very violent, even though it's still a wordplay situation. But there are people who play in a different environment, like the Lyricist Lounge crowd, which they call them the backpack rappers. Backpack rappers were the ones who had like a battle environment before there was a URL. Right? You would go to the Lyricist Lounge. You would go to the End of the Week. You would go to these places where lyricists, dudes who were going to be on the mic, blowing, you know, speaking and saying intricate lyrical schemes, were going to be, because you wanted to be considered a great MC for your wordplay and the way it was that you were going to present your style, similar to what you were saying, Pop, about presentation, being able to present, get up on stage and just present what I created without having to actually go against a particular opponent. I'm going against everybody who's in the building, right? So I would show up at battles downtown, you know what I'm saying, on, you know, 7th Street, 3rd Street, Avenue B, Avenue C, you know, we in the middle of the village, and I'm battling 15 MCs at the same time. I ain't just battling one. I'm on the stage battling 6 and 7 people at the same time with my wordplay, because I'm on that level of MCing where you can't even put one rapper in front of me. That's the confidence I had in my mind that if you put just one person in front of me, I'm going to destroy them. I'm going to take on everybody who thinks that they are a good rapper in this building, in this venue. So I think that that's another part of what battle, you know, rapping, period, is about. It's like I want to put myself, if I'm a competitor, in places where there are people who I want to compete against. And I think that what the URL system has done by putting together these battle rap events and growing the culture in terms of how it's being spoken about in what you presented earlier really was about identifying competitors and then putting competitors in front of each other, giving them an amount of time to study their opponent and then come to the stage ready to battle that particular opponent. So they definitely figured out a way to turn it more into a boxing match, like he was saying, smack, when he said he kind of used the premise of the UFC and the MMA right. kind of thing of placing two opponents who have had time to train and study and work to be able to come in and do this intricate process against each other. That really changed the spectrum, because before it was just, I'm a great MC, I'm walking in this room, and everybody's my competitor. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He found a yeah. better way to put it together so that they could make monetary gains. And that was very smart, and that is why, you know, battle rap has definitely solidified itself as a position, I mean, as a force in the music industry.
Very true, very true, very true. And I hope that people understand that that's what it is that it has been able to be monitored. It has been able to expand, especially as far as social media is concerned, has been a big help with that. Also, I think that it's important to let you know that the movie with Eminem, 8 Mile, that was all about battle rap. That's what that movie was about. It was about the battle rap situation. And there was another movie that was about a battle rap with females, and that was the 40-year-old version, V-E-R-S-I-O-N, and Misunderstood was in that movie. But, you know, it was about a sister who wanted to make it. She just wanted to make a presentation, and there were just parts of hip-hop that she had never been in the studio, and she didn't know about, you know, the underground that was happening as far as hip hop is concerned. And, you know, this brother, you know, who's a producer, he takes her into that world, into the world of hip hop, and especially when it comes to dealing with women in hip hop, that were doing it. And she was able to, this 4-year-old version, and that's what she did. It's just very important for the Muslim community, especially the pioneer generation, to have an understanding of that. That's what our effort is, to help you to understand that it's not necessarily negative. Oh, they're so negative about what it is that they're saying. It's wordplay. It has a lot to do with wordplay, and you know, who's the most creative. Who knows the dozens better? One of the things that I'm seeing is that this seems to be the same thing that has happened recently with the Cat Williams situation, that has happened when he started throwing shade on a whole lot of other artists. Now this is a creative art form, and in this being a creative art form of comedy, there was never a competition thing is concerned, but what made it competitive is that Cat Williams then went out and started, you know, talking about other artists in a negative way as far as the comedy was concerned. So it seemed to be the same thing. I mean, you know, that's what it seems to be to me. So it would seem like this is just how art evolves. What do you think?
Well, I don't think that is the way art is evolving. It's the direction they're spinning it in. And these are one of the things that you have to be aware of as a listener not only as a listener, but as a participant of the culture. You know, a lot of this stuff, you know, since hip-hop started, you know, making the changes with N.W.A. from P.E., you know, that was a battle in itself. And we got to understand that hip-hop is in a battle itself. As far as, you know, when P.E. was before P.E. era, so we could use P.E. as like B.C. before Christ.
What's P.E.?
P.E. is public enemy. P.E. is public enemy. Before public enemy, everybody was an individual. Everybody not only was an individual, but hip-hop was about individualism. It was you couldn't even bite or copy somebody. You couldn't even, you know, the stuff that Cat Williams was talking about. You couldn't even do that. You know, that was taboo in hip-hop. But then, you know, after P.E., the N.W.A. part, N.W.A. started off gangster rap and hip-hop, so it started changing the dynamic of rap and how it made hip-hop negative. Hip-hop was nothing but positive before N.W.A. So N.W.A. started the negativity in rap as far as the industry is concerned. So it steered the industry to this sending people to sending our men to jail and having our women on the pole. That's what the battle with hip-hop is right now. With this Cat Williams thing exposed and what it's been doing with hip-hop is that they've been distracting us with this ratchet hip-hop and this drug addict hip-hop. So they're still sending the women to the pole, but they got the men on drugs, going to jail, and not being able to identify as men. So hip-hop itself is under attack, you know, just like, you know, the comedy world is under attack. And these attacks are to distract us from what's really going on. See, hip-hop started out...
I got you.
Hip-hop started out with us economically, you know, being messed up. We was economically messed up, so that's how we created hip-hop. We was in them abandoned buildings, partying and messing around, experimenting with the music because we didn't have nothing. But as now, when time is where it looks like we got everything, we still don't have nothing. We just more in debt and more exposed to, you know, all right, do this, do this. Now hip-hop is dictating to us what to do, but not under our control. So that's really the biggest battle is right now is with hip-hop with us is distracting us, and we're not moving it the way it's supposed to go. It's being moved by pop culture and not the culture or the street culture.
Why is that? Well, why is that? Is it because that there are corporations that are in control? Because we have had on that have talked about, how corporations and record companies wanted to sign them because they thought they was good, but they wanted them to make changes, and instead of being positive, they wanted them to be negative. So how much does corporations have to do with it?
Corporations is probably the ones funding it. They're the ones funding all of this stuff. They're the ones putting these things in position, giving these artists this money to exploit and do what it's doing right now. It's a big distraction. They got bills that they've been signing and doing away with our rights as people, you know, while all of this has been happening. So hip-hop is a big distraction. And the battle is us taking back our art form and being able to express ourselves in the way that we see fit. As you were saying with the Muslim community, you know, how it wasn't a battle, it was more about presentation, you know what I mean? Or, you know, even when I go to a Muslim event, it's always something positive, always something, you know, representing God. It's always something, you know, from the culture of Islam or whatever, you know. And that's the thing hip-hop needs. Hip-hop needs its own culture and not just culture that's being created, this pop culture, which is falsifying the whole point of hip-hop. So that's the battle we really in.
As-salamu alaykum.
For me,
walaykum as-salam.
Walaykum as-salam. Yeah, Sister Martha?
Yes, I have a question. As you were beginning to speak about the money, and I was asking myself, okay, so how did the money get actualized beyond individuals just showing up and as far as I could see from the outside looking in, individuals showed up and just began to compete or just say something, and then they were pulled into the arena. Paperwork, is there a trail, is there I know you mentioned an entity that, funded it to a degree, but is that the avenue that everyone takes, or a young person thinking that they can get into it and they have, you know, just mental poetry to share? How do they get into that? They don't want to get into the ill will part of it.
That's a great point. And the point that I could make to that is that, you know, it's something like Eddie Murphy said it a long time ago in one of his specials. He had a special where he did this bit where he was talking about ice cream. The ice cream truck came, and he got ice cream, and, you know, the poor kids or the kids who didn't really have money at the time, because they all was poor, but the kids who didn't have money at the time, you know, you would tease them like, nah, you couldn't get no ice cream. You can't get no ice cream. And that's what the black community has been doing and allowing corporations and society to do to us. They give one or two of us, you know, some money, and then the one or two of us who has the money is put on this grand stage to appear as if this is the life. And then when kids see this is the life, they want the same money that they got. So that's the cycle they got us in. They'll give Jay-Z money, or they'll give such and such money. So one group of people or one, you know, thing of people will have the money, and then they'll put them on the spotlight to go, yo, this is what you're doing with money. So now that's why everybody's chasing money. That's why everybody's chasing the spotlight. That's why everybody needs to be somebody. That's why we have social media. That's why everybody is on posting about their life to see who's doing better and that's how they got us with the competition. First it was the differences. Now it's the competition. So it's all a trick. All of it is a trick to keep us occupied and to keep us focused on the dumb stuff that's going on with the hip hop culture that they're creating. You know,
let me dive in on you real quick. Let me dive in on you real quick to say this here. Great question, Sister Martha. People want to live, right? And you have a skill, and that skill is being recognized by someone, and they're able to pay you, and you're able to pay your rent. You're able to provide clothing for your kids. You're able to do certain things that you couldn't do before because you didn't have a monetary outlet. And some of these people, when you think about them, like, they don't come from the best environments. I'm not saying they all are from the ghetto, because that's not true at all. There are many of these people who come from good homes, come from two-parent homes, who come from the suburbs. I mean, one of the best MCs in battle rap culture history, Hitman Holla, is not from the ghetto. He is not from the ghetto. He grew up in a great home in the suburbs, was, you know, supported, went to really good schools. Like, it's a choice being made by people to participate in a thing that they really feel passionate about. And it does have its negativities, as do many things. I work for the Department of Education. I'm at work. When I go to work, I realize that, you know, kids are failing in New York schools and can't read at a certain level, but yet and still, I still go to work and collect my check as a part of the system. The system is not perfect. It doesn't work to the best of its ability at many points, whether that's at the DOE or it's the music industry. But there are people who are using this as a positive outlet. It's not always about what the content is, because the content, as any performer will do, you know, an actor will go out and perform in a movie. I mean, how many movies has Arnold Schwarzenegger been in? We know Arnold Schwarzenegger is not a one-man army going to take over, you know, whatever country or fight whatever guerrilla faction. He's an actor, and he's performing. And the same thing has to be understood in these environments, that these people, some of them have this background and use it as a way to push themselves forward. But then there are others who are just very passionate about it, see it as a way that they can make money to provide for themselves and their families, and they do so. And again, it's a tough line to walk, but we still want to remember, and that's why we come to the show and bring this kind of energy to the community, is to let people know that this is not, as we talk about on, you know, the Quick Hitters Experience, which will be coming up at 12 o'clock, art is not a crime.
Right, and it's, I'm glad that you made those points. That was right on time, and as a Muslim community, and we're making a presentation, you many times they say that music is haram. Well, this is some of this stuff is the haram about it, but it's haram because it's a business. And we have a problem with that, because it's like, do you have to present some negative in order to be positive? And it's positive for you, because it winds up being about money. And that has been the problem that all of the prophets, peace be upon them, have always brought. The prophets have always shown the problems that was, the people had gone so far as money or human degradation. They had degraded their humanity so far. They had become greedy. They had become selfish. And then, you know, what the prophet has to do, but, you know, what the creator has to do is they have to send the prophet, you know, to come with the message. And so we as a Muslim community, that's what we're trying to do. What we're doing is we bring the message, you know, the message in this issue of hip-hop and music. We bring the positive message, and we do it in order to make a presentation to the world, to let the world know that, you know, listen, this is the way to go. The way to go is to be more positive about it and not necessarily profitable. I mean, if it's profitable, fine. And what we have found is this, especially as far as being Muslim, that it's quality over quantity, all right? If you have a quality product, then people are going to come to you because your product is quality. So we want to, as far as our artistic sounds and cultural insights, you know, what we want to do is we want to continue to present quality product. And, yeah, we're going up against a lot of negativity that's in American culture. But, you know, if we don't do it, who's going to do it? So that's our responsibility, and that's what we have to do. On the program that's coming up, Quick Hitters has found a way to utilize their hip-hop experience in a way that is positive, that affects young people in a more positive way, so that they can become more confident within themselves. And so I'm going to, you know, just the last couple of minutes, Sister Martha's, anybody, you know, have their hands raised. They have a question on anything that they want to, you know, say, Sister Martha?
I'm going to suggest to them, if you have a question, assalamu alaikum, dear listeners,
please press 1 on your phone and we'll open your mic and allow you to ask your question with Kivel Kwan, Bill Blass, and William Kareem. Definitely not me. But I thank you for your answers. I was speaking with my granddaughter, and you all, inshallah, God willing, would get a chance to meet her when she was 13 to 16. Well, I say from birth, actually. I've been in her ear, and praise be to Allah, then let her fly her own wings, so to speak, after she was 18. And now she's 24. She's been, believe it or not, teaching her cousins, who from birth, four of them, and their oldest is 12. So all she is doing is repeating. But now she wants to, but she's always been on TikTok and other social media and reading about National Geographic and studying the Africa and other areas, and very open-minded and love music. And so now she's wanting to connect and give what she can offer, as she has to offer, inshallah, at 24. And I studying it. She introduced that to me yesterday. So that's why we entertained her coming on today. But inshallah, I'll forgive her for not being here today, because she does work. She's a work, I say workaholic. But praise be to Allah. But thank you. Those were my comments, William.
Alhamdulillah. Thank you, Sister Martha, and all of the listeners on American Muslim 360. We're getting ready to come up with the Quick Hitters experience with Mr. Cavell and Bill Blass. We hope that you will stay on with us. And everybody, just remember, next week, Bill Blass, US2G, is going to drop his album 2424. And next week is actually is going to be 2-3 next week. It will be 2-3, okay, 2-4. And so you may get an opportunity to be one of the first to hear some of his original cuts on that album. And so, Bill, I'd like to thank you, you know, for participating with us today. And Cavell, definitely like you.
Thank you for having me.
You know, coming on early.
Yeah.
We're coming on early, you know, and having this conversation about battle raps. And right now what we're going to do, we're going to bring in the Quick Hitters experience right here on Cultural Insights on American Muslim 360 and A New Day Community Radio.
Yeah, well, here we go.
Assalamu alaikum. This is the Preacher Hadi, host of Al Islam and Focus Learning Lab here on AM 360, inviting you to join me Saturday evening at our new time, 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, as we continue to share inspiring and thought-provoking Islamic education. Inshallah, I will see you in the lab at our new time, 5 to 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Saturday evening. Assalamu alaikum, and thank you kindly.
Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to AM 360. Join your host, Munira Habil, every Tuesday from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we explore relationship topics addressing what we didn't know, what we've learned, and what we need to know and why. Because on this show, it's all about courtship and marriage.
Bring you our conversational basics right here as we talk a little bit about what's going on with things in the community of hip-hop. And one of the things that's happening is that there is a case going on right now in the court system where hip-hop is on trial. Not only is the artist, whose name is Young Thug, who comes out of a crew in Atlanta, Georgia, called YSL, also known as Rich Gang, these brothers have been associated with artists like Future, Drake,
Kendrick Lamar, T.I. from Atlanta, 2 Chainz. All of these guys are very popular artists in the hip-hop culture, and no doubt, without a question, Young Thug was one of those individuals who was on his rise and had been doing very well over about a 6 or 7 year period. But right now he's on trial. It's called a RICO case, where he is being accused of leading a criminal organization that trafficked young women and drugs and guns across state lines and benefited from criminal activities that were associated with his music company, YSL. This recently has been discussed a lot because what the prosecutors have been doing is bringing in his music and lyrics and videos as evidence to prove that the organization, his record company, was a criminal organization. So, again, it is interesting how the music of hip-hop, the narrative that has been presented around it, has now been pushed into the court system and is being used as evidence to prosecute people who are using this as a platform to grow. So, Pop, you heard anything about this?
Hola.
Yeah, sorry, I was on mute. Yeah, I would like to know if Bill Blass, US2G, you know, whether you, you know, have any comments on this, because this here, as far as the negativity is concerned, have you heard about this, Bill?
Yes, I have heard about it, but I haven't been really following it, you know, so I don't really know too much about it.
Okay. All right. Yeah, so I will make some comments on it. I think that it's racist to some degree. I really do. I think it's an opportunity for people to get creative with law so that they can make a name for themselves as having successfully prosecuted some people who who are being artistic in form, and they're basically saying that the difference between what YSL is doing is that it is reality TV, it is reality that they have been dealing in, and you know, reality TV is also scripted to some degree, but it still garners a lot of watchers that are watching reality TV. And it's the same thing with this YSL. They have utilized their music and their videos on their visuals to garner watchers, you know, and with that, they have created a certain amount of fame with that, and it's been a formula that's basically has worked for them, and because this formula is working for them, they have continued with it. But you know, how do you separate art from fiction, reality from fiction? How do you separate that? I think that's the big question that we're going to be dealing with. That's what I think it is.
There's no question. And again, we're going to talk about that a little bit more and in depth and take it personal. Once again, it is a very interesting process, and we're going to have an opportunity to build a little bit more. We'll go over some of the details of how it is that it started and the evolution of the case and how it is that the prosecutors are using this music, which we love, this art form, which we, you know, have been a part of for a very long time, to criminalize black and brown people all over the country. And so it's going to be an interesting conversation without a shadow of a doubt. And we appreciate you once again being with us right here on the Quick Hitters Experience. Thanks again for joining us on today's show, January 27th. Beautiful Saturday. Thank you to Bill Blass for holding in there, man, after the interview. One of the greatest ever to do it. You know what I mean? We're going to jump into our next piece, which is curated by our incredible host and, father, Papa Doc. Do the thing, man, unapologetically.
Yeah, unapologetically. Hold on for a second. Okay, there we go.
Get a good reaction, but you know how people are. They just tell you what you want to hear, and I was never a star, and so I thought in music I would never get far. And I really like fame is what makes me write these bars, but sometimes I sit and think I feel I'm on the brink. Opportunity is knocking, I just can't find a doorknob. I'm watching all these chick dancers on the mic line. They made it a little farther though when I'm still grinding. They don't love it like I do, and I ain't crying. Just the passion that you hear and put my heart in these rhymes, you know. Just wanna spread the earth with goodwill and feel like God is gifting me, so I keep it truthful and real. And the truth is a deal. It's next to impossible to get if you dropping knowledge, cause they scared of what you represent. So I
knock, knock, knocking on the door, waiting on the door.
know I'm the type to celebrate when my man do great. Never feel like I'm a failure when he do his thing. But I can't say the same when I share my success. Like, dog, you ain't all of that, and so I digress. I learned the hard way that the more you understand, the more of a stranger you become in this land. See, it's the journey and the path gets lonely. But the trick is to still love them for them. Now when the friend becomes a hindrance more than a help, there comes a time when you gotta choose self. You know we all gotta death.
Everybody needs to understand this. This is something that you really need to understand. All of us need to really understand. We really need to understand some of these things that are going on today. That the human being can do whatever he wants to do. But, that's right, what about it? Comes back around. Yes, and what goes up? Surely. No question about it. That is the truth. Talk to him. Talk to him.
Yeah, but how I'm back now. Like pure coke, the bass up in the crack valve. My black face represent my black child. That's how the gods now river run. Like the earth revolve around the sun. How come y'all picking bad love material? Love money and everything you have. What's that is, what about God? Times is getting hard, other nations are dropping bombs. We need to open up Quran and open up the Bibles. Open up your mind now to die my recital. Stop praising these men, praising these idols. My people, the war between good and evil. We need to understand what you do comes back to you. Kids holding back for you, stack for you. Make the money, give it back to you. Kill a black for you, now picture that coming back to you.
Lay slain, drawn into the game. As we fall in the rain and wallow in our pain, like dogs on a chain with murder on the brain. And nothing in our eyes like devils in disguise. Beats burn through your soul like Jesus fire. You Judas, go niggas, it's time you're retired. We are entertained on a hot ass beat. Thugs wanna toss the heat, spit blood to the beat. Can the devil fool a Muslim? Well, nowadays it seems every thug's a soldier, but they on the wrong team. Gotta battle white devils and black devils. Spiritual war toward a fourth all levels. Me and my team, son, we rock for the right. Doing battle with the gin in a pale moonlight. Everything that goes up has got to come down. And what goes around will come back around. Yeah. We'll come back around. Yeah. We'll come back around. What goes around comes back around. And what goes up
mixed with unconditional love, with limitless heart, with limitless love. War for control and war for chaos. Words for the people moving, soft to lay off. These are the few causing general blame. Greed is confused with what to attain. Everything is questioned. What's later, what's left, and who's amazing, who's destined. I can change the clue's direction. When the moon falls to the earth, the mountains rise up to the surf. Be wary, no protection from the military. The search of red, really wary. Love and ask very. The ocean's corruption. The cosmos, prepare immediately for the Holy Ghost. Dictatorships can't ever claim spiritualness. Spiritualist, here in the rift, it's time to relationship.
What goes around comes back around, and what goes around comes back around. What goes around comes back around.
That's right. What goes around comes around. You can do whatever it is that you want to do. But the truth of the matter is, what goes around comes around. And this is just the fact of the matter. This is an exclusive for you.
Keep your head right.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be in all the stores.
Bell
G. Day one, Mama Bass Scholar. Proud Papa Bass Show Robert.
Super Baby.
Yes, that was a big Super Baby. Yeah, but right now what we want to know is as far as unapologetically our music, what you heard today was Words of Power by Covelli Kwan and William Fitzgerald, or William Bill US2G. Then you heard Knocking on the Heaven's Door with Khalil Ismael and What Goes Around Come Around by We Us. Those are the only three that we could actually get in a 10-minute period, but there was more, and we was getting ready to play Super Baby, but stay tuned, and you'll hear that next time. Gazelle?
Without a question, what we do here is we try to make sure we highlight and show love, man, to the music that we create because it is truly important. So you took a quick listen to a quick list of our songs, some of our favorites. If you or someone you know is an artist and would like to have your music played unapologetically, email us at anew.day@live.com. Once again, anew.day@live.com. It's unapologetically our music right here on the Quick Hitters Experience, curated by Papa Dop. And check us out on soundcloud.com/the Quick Hitters Experience to hear some of the wonderful things we do with kids all over the city. Keep your ears locked. We're going to keep moving on. Right now, what we're going to jump into is our Quick Hit portion of the show, curated by Bill Blast. Let's do it, Pop.
The Quick Hitters Experience. 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 The Quick Hitters Experience.
Thank you.
Yeah, my mind state for like the crime in the summertime, higher than average, lot of cabbage, thank God I never abide by the established guidelines to keep niggas inside a fabric, commissioned by the state, I skate by the masses like Yoo-hoo, with a new riding passengers, shout out Oak Cliff, I'm about to fly to Dallas, decade from now, I might just buy the Mavericks, what up Mark Cuban, I am only part human, half man, half amazing, plus I'm good at math like amazing, hate to use stereotypes, but that's light compared to what a nigga get from Caucasians, no race baiting, treat the beat like PlayStation, reporting to you live from the International Space Station, I probably vacation on Mars, the flow is out of this world and souls are bars, blow the facade right off of your squad, little rappers, I love you, but you ain't shit till you got office in Prague, look that up, a book nigga, pick that up, expand your vocab, I'm giving out toe tags for no cash, awesome, a long plus, 3 seasons after, please, CC, a rapper telling meet me, it's absolutely imperative that my heat speak to rappers, the problem with this game is this weak sea of rappers, I'm the answer on the low, I'm a cheat sheet for rappers, I came around AC to DC adapters, plug talk, what I'm really saying is the same, but my niggas move cane like HBCU cappers, whole town full of CC Sebastians, you think niggas getting fat, pitching crack, not really.
Assalamu alaikum, this is Edward Willis, advisor at Graceline Community, asking you to join me in supporting community-wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360. Make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or phone in your pledge to 910-317-0297. Again, make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or by phone at 910-317-0297. Together, we can remake the world. Thank you.
There's a place where words make people, a place where you're invited to expand your heart and mind. There's a place where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. You're listening to the American Muslim 360 Radio Network, 24/7, Muslim-hosted, from religion and current world events, politics, faith and education, marriage and health, music and arts, physical fitness and more. Join AM 360 where we're helping to build a model community every day. It's a place where you can help remake the world.
And I'm running thin on my patience. Need someone to hug, even took it back to the basics. You see what you got me out here doing? Might have threw me off, but can't nobody stop the movement. Let's go. Left foot, right foot, levitating. Pop stars, do a leaper with the baby. I had to lace my shoes for all the blessings I was chasing. If I ever slip, I fall into a better situation. So catch up, go put some cheese on it. Get out and get your bread up. They always leave when you fall, but you run together. Weight of the world on my shoulders, I kept my head up. Now baby, stand up, cause girl, you
want me.
And, of course, that is the last song that we just played was Say It Loud and Black and Out Proud by James Brown. The song before that was Dua Lipa was Levitating by Dua Lipa. Dua Lipa. That's D-U-A-L-I-P-A. And the song is Levitating. Song number three was J. Cole Album of the Year. Number two was the second song we played was Mary J. Blige. All That I Can Say. And the first song that you heard was from the 1950s by Frankie Lyman, Why Do Fools Fall in Love? Covelli Kwan?
Once again, incredible set, Pop. We appreciate you. We appreciate Bill Blash, US2G, for holding us down, man. Again, this is our Quick Hits segment of the week where we take a listen to a quick list of songs that are out there or that we would love for you to listen to. We play songs that are climbing the charts or songs we just need you to hear. So if you want to send your favorite songs or suggestions, Go do that at anew.day@live.com. Again, anew.day@live.com to join the experience. If you can, visit us on Instagram.com/thequickhittersexperience to check out some of the things that we've been doing with young people all over the city. Once again, thank you for joining us here Saturday, January 27, 2024, on the Quick Hitters Experience, hosted by me, Mr. Cavell. We're going to jump into something. We're going to bring back something. We gave everybody an opportunity last week to check out our quick quote, but we're going to give everybody an opportunity to check it out again just because we want to keep this kind of flowing with you guys, man, giving you an opportunity to see what we're doing. But, Pop, before we get into it, let's do the thing.
Real quick, lyrics, man, on some real spit.
So, every time we jump into our quick quote of the week, what we do is we're going to play a few lines taken from a song or a famous MC, and we'll play the quote two times to give you an opportunity to hear it. What we want you to do is listen into the voice to hear if you've heard this voice somewhere before, the music, to hear if you've maybe heard this song before. This right here is the first time we're going to play the quote, so Pop, without fail, let's do it.
You get caught in the mid, folks are crushed, that stereotype, here's what we did. We got ourselves together so that you can unite and fight for what's right.
All right, that was play number one on it. Like we said, we're going to give you a second one, so here is the second one.
Okay, Sister Martha, you ready? Here we go.
You get caught in the mid, folks are crushed, that stereotype, here's what we did. We got ourselves together so that you can unite and fight for what's right.
All right. What are we doing right now? We waiting. We're going to see if somebody hits that one and gives us some information that can help us figure out who this is and what song this comes from. Anybody on the line?
Bill. I think we have somebody who knows what it is. I think we got somebody that knows it.
All right, that's what's okay. Up. Let's see what we got.
All right, so we're going to open microphone 917-856.
I was thinking.
The microphone is open.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, we're going to go with you first. All right, go ahead, Wally.
Jamal
Dean Bilal.
Yes,
let Sister Martha go. Go ahead, Sister Martha. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to be asleep in a second. Is that Drake?
Drake. Good try. All right. We'll keep that in the air.
Wait a minute. Maybe Jamel was going to say the same thing.
Yeah. Well, let's see what the brother has to say.
Sound like him, everyone.
Alaikum as-salam.
Good to hear from everyone. Great show. I wasn't going to say Drake. I think it's a few decades maybe before Drake. It sounds like KRS-One, and it sounds like a collaboration of artists that made this song called I know the verses in there, heading for self-destruction.
Ooh, yes sir, you know. there is no question, brother Jamal, all the time, man. You know your hip hop history, good kid.
I know some of the early stuff. I don't know it all. Just a little bit of early stuff, Aki. Thank you.
Without question,
I have some comments on the topics. Yes, I have some comments on the topics, but I'll save it for later if y'all have some questions and answers later on, inshallah.
Please.
Thank you.
Please do stay around for our next segment because we will be continuing that conversation. I think that's going to be a great thing. But we want to make sure that we, because you so eloquently put this on the table, KRS-One and self-destruction, let's go ahead and play that because it's one of the most iconic and important songs in hip-hop history. So without a shadow of a doubt, let's go ahead and play that self-destruction. Let's go.
We all agree tonight, all of the speakers have agreed that America has a very serious problem. Not only does America have a very serious problem, but
Here it is, we're talking about battle raps, and you see that this was early hip-hop right here, and this song is Self-Destruction. It is one of the early evolutions as far as hip-hop is concerned, and you can see the difference between a battle rap and, you know, something where people come together and do something positive. Cavell?
Once again, we appreciate everybody joining us here on the Quick Hitters Experience every Saturday right here on Cultural Insights with Brother William Kareem, the original Muslim rapper, and of course myself, Mr. Cavell, his son, and all of the great people who join us at American Muslim 360. Thank you for listening in. We are having a wonderful day, and of course we always appreciate your comments, concerns, suggestions, and please, if you have any of those, drop by anew.day@live.com. We always are looking for different suggestions about what quotes we could play, topics we can talk about, or music that we can bring to the table to support the culture that we continue to love and continue to promote. So that right there was our quick quote. When you get an opportunity, visit us at tiktok.com/thequickhittersexperience to check out some of the things we do with young people around the city. And, of course, check out www.quickhitters.org to see some of the amazing things that we're doing. As a matter of fact, real quick, in March, we will be at the Girls Inc. annual conference. I believe it's being held in Brooklyn. We are going to be there presenting to their organization. We will be maybe the only men in the conference, and we did it last year. It was a great, great experience. We had a wonderful, wonderful time there. And if you go to www.quickhitters.org, you can actually see the performance from the young ladies, five wonderful young ladies who put together a great song presentation, which was delivered in front of 300 participants at last year's conference. So, you know, we out here trying to make sure we impacting the youth. There is no question. All right. So great to be with us once again. We're going to jump into our next piece, which we're going to talk and continue our conversation around the situation with YSL, and that is Art Is Not a Crime. Let's go, Pop.
The way he laid the blame is inspirational. We had us to get us ready for greatness.
So, once again, welcome to our segment of the show where we talk about Art Is Not a Crime, and we're going to continue our conversation from earlier in the day. We've been around the topic of battle rap, the criminalization, and the personalization of the music of hip-hop. Let me give you a little insight on what this situation is and how it all occurred. In May of 2022, a massive Fulton County indictment alleges that 28 people participated in racketeering, street gang activity, and other charges under the gang name Young Slime Life, YSL. Jeffrey Williams, otherwise known as the renowned rapper Young Thug, is accused of leading the gang and had been arrested. In June 2022, the court denied bond for Young Thug. It argued he poses a significant flight risk and is dangerous to the community. Young Thug currently remains in Fulton County Jail in Atlanta. In August, the county hands down a new indictment hitting Young Thug with several new counts. These included charges related to street gang activity, drugs, and guns. One of his most acclaimed crew members, who is a major artist named Gunna, was then arrested in December of 22. He was named in the indictment, and then he was subsequently released from jail after taking a plea bargain. This plea means the defendant formally admitted guilt in court but maintains innocence overall.
Wow.
He is one of several people who are eventually removed from the case through plea deals, severances, and other methods. In January of 2023, the jury was selected, and Young Thug's trial began. At this point, where we are at this time, is that the trial has been paused as of the 11th of this month for a week in observance of Martin Luther King Jr. Day. It was paused, but they are resuming the case shortly. And, again, I just wanted to give you a little bit of background on kind of where the situation was.
Wow.
So, you know, just in giving you some more of that information, what do you think about this whole process, man? You know, again, of these people. Let me ask the question this way, because I think that this is interesting. When you think about the monies that have been put into artists over the years, especially at the very beginning when they're starting out, a lot of the monies in the stories that we've seen and experienced can come from street culture, meaning come from drug money. The continuance of that, in terms of the way that this trial is trying to portray it, do you think that that part of the story, the part of the story where, you know, someone starts out in the street with a drug life and then invests this money and then builds up this organization that inevitably can house and support many people? Look at Jay-Z as a perfect example of that, or Lil Wayne, a perfect example of that. What do you think about that being kind of the crux that the criminal justice system is using to bring these charges against a lot of these young men, and particularly in this case?
What I'm going to reserve a comment. I want to see if this was part of the program where Jamal Dean Bilal wanted to make a comment.
Yes. Sound like.
Give us some.
If I may, I'm going to be kind of tempted. I know we only have a few minutes, but I think this is important. You sang this song. You played the song "Self Destruction." Very great song. Should be played throughout the decades. Very important song, and it speaks to obviously trying to do the right thing. But if you're dealing with like particularly our culture, where we didn't have for many years, and we had to do, in some cases, many things to try to survive, and some of those things would be considered illegal. Some of them didn't necessarily harm others, but in some cases it did harm others. So now that we've gotten money, we might have still created a trail where, you know, perhaps people were hurt as well as ourselves. So we're trying to recover. And we know in our religion, when we convert to Islam or revert, there's a born-again aspect where your sins are forgiven by Almighty God, Allah. And if you've done things that wasn't pleasing, you can make restitution to those who might have been affected. So you can make a way for bettering the lives of yourself and other people that you may have hurt. But sometime when we get caught in the system and we use means to make money, and we want to keep that system going of making that money, or even if we fall short where we have to get money quick, we may want to get out of that particular way of life, but that life is bringing us, has brought us that particular amount of money, so we remain in that life. And in terms of the court system, if you get caught up in the court system, it's interesting, though, to learn from any of these trials, because you do, you may have members who might have done things that they might not have been pleased with, and again, they remain in that way of life, or they may be now being suffering or paying a price or suffering from an old lifestyle, and they may have changed. So a lot of these things need to be looked at, but I think overall, being objective, we should just try to learn from it, not necessarily point fingers or cast judgments as such. When I say judgments, I mean condemn, because we can always pass judgments. So that's some of my opinions on that. Thank you. As-salamu alaykum.
Yeah. Wa alaykum as-salam. Thank you, bro, for that. I'd also like to add to that, because you gave one of the ways the perception is looking at it. We're gonna talk about the other perception way of looking at it, especially from a lawyer point of view, that somebody actually got creative and thought that this was a way that they might be able to make a name for themselves. That was one of the things that I was saying, that, like a prosecutor said, well, you know, I'm going to make a name for myself, so I'm going to go after these young people that are out here, you know, making this money from hip-hop. And I'm telling you this here, with the advent of social media, a lot of money can be made off of Facebook and Instagram and all of the others just by getting clicks. Lots of money can be made. So to make videos about, what might be happening in your neighborhood and put that up on it, it can generate millions of dollars. I think that what the lawyer and the prosecutors have to do is they're using all of their creativity, all of their art, the art of law, to go ahead and prosecute by saying that this is not fiction, but this is reality that they're doing, that they're making videos, and these videos are not fiction. You know, these videos are reality. And there's a fine line that goes with that, because, you know, one of the things that the artists do wrong, what they do wrong is they stay in character about what they did on the video is the same way that they act in real life. So then the question becomes, well, how do you tell the difference? How do you tell the difference? Whether are they in character or is this real life? And you take that from what a movie star does. Arnold Schwarzenegger may play the part of, you know, like this great big, you know, hunk of a guy, but he doesn't stay in character. He comes out of character and comes into normal lifestyle. And it's the same thing with Brad Pitt, who, or anybody else, or any other movie star. What they do is they're in character on film, but then they have a whole other visual effect when they are out of character. So this is where the lawyers have an opportunity to be creative. because, like I said, these hip-hop artists, you know, the character that they're playing in video and on the, in their music is the same character that they're portraying in real life, and that's what the prosecutors are trying to connect. Well,
I'll tell you, it's an interesting conversation that could continue on and on. We will check back without a shadow of a doubt on what's happening with the criminalization of the art form that we love called hip-hop, and how it is that this particular case with YSL, Young Slime, Life, along with the people who are involved, Young Thug, and others, that it went from 28 defendants to, at this point, there are only 7 defendants left in the actual case. So we'll continue to keep our eyes out on it as it comes back. They're actually on a pause right now. We're going to move ourselves into back into a conversation that we were having earlier in the hours, which is the conversation about battle rap. And again, it will stay similar to the conversation we're having here in Art Is Not a Crime. Thank you, please, to the brother Jamal for coming through and giving his comments, which were incredible, as always. We're going to move on, though, and take it into take it personal. Let's do it, Pop. So, beautiful day. We appreciate you. This is the last segment of the show. We want to continue with the conversation that was happening earlier in the Cultural Insights 3-hour session, where the interview process had myself and Bill Blass discussing the up-and-coming, the established, at this point, battle rap scene. But in this Take It Personal part, we're going to look at this section of it, which derives kind of directly from Art Is Not a Crime, which is in the battle rap culture, there is a formula. And a part of that formula really exists in the fact that you get a chance to study your opponent. And many of these brothers, since they're from the neighborhoods that we all grow up in that are considered the streets or the ghetto, these brothers have a aggressive formula to attack their opponents. A lot of it revolves around what they will do to the other person, what they will say about the other person's mother, father, sister, brother, children. I mean, it gets really, really personal. And so, again, I think in this segment, we want to kind of steer into the personal attacks that go on with the culture, and particularly when we're talking about battles, right? There was one that was very famous. There were two that I want to bring up. Includes the same guy, but just want to bring up two. There was a situation where Drake and Meek Mill got into a battle. Meek Mill's of the MMG record label, which is run by another rapper named Rick Ross, Maybach Music Group, and he signed Meek Mills, who is from Philadelphia, and Meek Mills got into a rap battle beef with Drake, who is an artist from Canada, who is signed underneath Cash Money Records, Young Money Records, which is run by Lil Wayne and the company Cash Money. And these guys got into a battle, and what happened was Drake went after Meek Mill for acting like he was portraying himself as a goon or a gangster, but yet they were having a rap battle over Twitter. And so it was perceived as this thug guy going on to the social media to attack this guy who we consider softer. We would have thought that Drake, the softer guy, would have been the one on social media using his what we call Twitter fingers I guess now X Fingers. But Meek Mills was definitely thrown under the bus for the way in which he responded and Drake's rap, his comeback or his lyrics were tremendous, and he was perceived to have won that battle. In another instance with Drake, there was an artist named Pusha T who is signed to Pharrell, one of the Neptune producers. He produces music. He got into a thing with Drake where Pusha T found out some information about Drake, where Drake had a son who he hadn't told the world about. But Pusha T, because he had found this information in this diss record, which is critically panned as being kind of corny, right? Pusha T's thing is kind of corny, his lyrics. But that personal attack made Drake have to tell the world that he had a son. And so these personal attacks that happen, the attacking your character, attacking your family, can really put people in a tough situation. And again, how do we respond to these things? And I think that in battle culture, you have to develop a thick skin. Bill Blass was saying it earlier in the conversation. You have to develop a thick skin. So just wanted to put that on the table as the premise for this question. Do you think that competitors in hip-hop, especially knowing that it can turn deadly, can continue to evolve a culture of aggression in this way in battle rap culture without there being, at some point,
muted,
a situation unmuted that affects the way in which people can continue this cultural piece of the art?
Well, though, I think that it'll continue anyway, and I think it continues because I think that it has a lot to do with just really, I just think it has to do with human nature, and I think that, you know, it's like gossip, you know, it's like, you know, people spread gossip, people want to hear gossip, and so when things come out, as far as you can put it in an art form if you want to, but, you know, that's what has made, you know, TMZ a special. You know, that is what made the other gossip magazines special, because they find out things that other people don't know about. So I just think that as far as a community of human beings, I think it will basically continue. We do have a telephone call. I'm going to go ahead and take this telephone call. This 334-419. Okay. 334-419. Your microphone is open.
Alaikum assalam, and thank you for this program. It brings to mind, you know, a lot of Quranic references, particularly one that is foundational in terms of how God says the human being is made up, our makeup. And he says that we have to be aware of two things: being hasty and being forgetful. And there are other references in terms of our human psychology that I find speak to these issues, where African Americans in particular, we are overly moody and emotional. You know, we're quick, you know, because of social conditioning, we're quick to be in our feelings. And the battle rap, let me back up for just a minute. I'm going to try to be as succinct as I can in dealing with the time, in the interest of time. I took a course at this community, at this college, dealing with early childhood development, and in the process, we studied case studies of environment, you know, nature over nurture, how we're made up, but how the environment can affect us, and we studied case studies of individuals that were being abused by the caretaker, and how, when they were saved from those circumstances, the children looked as though they were retarded. But once they got into a healthy environment, they blossom as children being nurtured and responding to healthy nurturing. And a lot of these things, these ego-driven battles, it's unhealthy when the ego is in the lead of the community of self. It's unhealthy. And you can get stuck. We see these youngsters getting stuck, like the method actors. The method actor gets into a role, and he gets stuck in that role. He stays in that role and he doesn't come out. And many of these method actors, when we look at them, they're not healthy. You know, they're not healthy individuals, because getting into that kind of focus is not good for the soul, you know, if it's negative. You know, if it's a negative portrayal, you can get stuck and lost in that. And I'll stop there.
Yeah, I think that's what happened with I really think that's what happened with Will Smith, really. I think he got stuck in that Richard Williams role. I think he really got stuck in that, you know. And something just turned on and he wasn't able to turn on. Because we know that he's really not, you know, a negative person. We know that about Will Smith, but I really think that he got stuck in that role and it made him respond. Thank you, Brother Michael. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you. I want to say this has been a spirited discussion all throughout the Cultural Insights hours here on Saturday, and it's been great to have people joining in the conversation. Thank you to everyone who, you know, joined in and had something to say. I think that every comment really came from a place of knowledge, but also a place of understanding that we as a people continue to evolve, that we have lots of outlets, and we will, at this show, continue to bring great conversation to the table to allow for us to have debate and inspired solutions that continue to help us evolve into the future. Once again, thank you to everyone who's joined us today. Sister Martha and the American Muslim 360 audience, New Day Community Radio, and, of course, Bill Blast for being with us and curating what we do. Thank you, Papa Doc. Thanks, everyone. We will see you next week. I am Mr. Cavell, and let me give you the greetings. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum.
Alaikum assalam. Sister Martha?
Yes. That is it, everyone.
Any closing comment?
Oh, just to join us, everyone, at 5 p.m. if you come to AM 360. Preetha Abdul Hadi will be presenting Al Islam in Focus, where she deals with the attributes of Allah.
Walaikum salam.
Thank you. And as we do, Jamal, do you have any last comments that you wanted to make?
Yeah, only a beautiful program, as I said. Brother Cavell, I reached out to you going a couple months by email. You might want to check. If so, can you respond or let me know if that email is still up and running?
Okay. Let me see.
Brother Jamal, I'll check and see what it is. I didn't see an email from you, but I'll make sure to check and get back to you.
Okay. Thank you, brother.
Yes, sir.
Thank you,
sir. And thank you, Brother Jamal. And as you know, the way that we end the program, we always end the program with the Adhan, because the prayer came in, and we take the responsibility as a Muslim radio program to make sure that we play the Adhan and make sure that, as a reminder, that it's time for the Dua prayer. And until next time, we give you the greetings. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. This is William Kareem signing off.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله،
Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.